Well, since I've been gone, life has turned upside down for the New Orleans Pelicans. AD's gone. What does that mean for the future? Plus, LSU's got another commitment on the football field. Where does that put the Tigers among the national leaders? And what does it mean for Ed O as he continues to try to build up that area where you got to have the biggins to beat the biggins? Plus, we've got a U.S. Open golf champion. We'll recap that from Pebble Beach and more. Hey, Tuesday, June 18th, 2019.
The 2-1. Swung on and in the air to deep left. That ball is high. That is far. That is gone. His second home run in as many games. Cameron. He hits one to left. And the Yankees take a 3-0 lead.
One oh to Ozzie. He hits one high and deep. This one will challenge the chop house. Out towards the foul pole. It is a home run. And another moonshot for the Braves. Back-to-back home runs out of McCann and Albies. It's 12-3.
Robinson Cano steps in. First ball swinging. It's one to deep right. Marquez back. Looks up. And it's gone. A home run. Robinson Cano shoots one over a 16.5-foot-high wall for Cano, his fourth home run of the year. Mets get a run back, and the Braves' lead is cut to 5-3.
And a great good afternoon. Happy Tuesday to you and yours. Back. Whew! What a weekend it's been. What a few days it's been. My main man, CD, always available, always there, and I greatly appreciate all he does in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. I am yours truly, Jordy Helfberg, on remote, and that remote is at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. Just full disclosure, my daughter had a back issue, and she has had a very successful back surgery. My sincerest thanks to Dr. Andrew King and his entire staff at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. They were absolutely fantastic. But we're in for a very trying time, as the rehabilitation process will be slow. It'll be tedious. It will be arduous. But I got a 14-year-old who's a fighter, and I know she's going to do everything she can. So to all of you, I kept it quiet, but it gets out. And to all of those prayers that came our way, we greatly, greatly appreciate it. Not working on much sleep, I can tell you that. But as they say in show business, the show must go on. And so we are back. And I don't know if we're better than ever, but we're back. And we will give you everything we've got for the next 2 hours. But CD, great to have, great to be back. And I appreciate you helping out, you and the rest of the gang, for in my absence. I greatly appreciate it. But we're back, and I look forward to Hot Topics and much, much more today. So thank you, my friend.
You're more than welcome, Jordy. It's great to have you back on the airwaves after a few days away.
It's good. It's a great escape, to be quite honest with you. And so, again, a daughter's doing well, and she's got a great support group, and we're all here to help her out. So, life goes on, the beat goes on, and we go on as well. I thought it was going to happen. Didn't know exactly when, but I thought it would happen no later than this past weekend. Of course, the big story, and everybody's touched upon it, but we haven't yet here. I haven't yet. And that is the trade of Anthony Davis going to the Los Angeles Lakers in exchange for three players and a whole bunch of draft picks, including the fourth pick overall in this Thursday's NBA draft. So even before this historic summer of free agency, what's going to happen? There's been a shift. There's been a change. And to be quite honest with you, I don't think there were many players in this game. I believe that Rich Paul, hate him, love him, whatever, and I don't think many in this part of the world like the guy for the way he handled things, but he did for his client what you would want your agent to do for you. He got Anthony Davis exactly what Anthony Davis wanted. He let it be known near and wide that Boston is only going to be for 1 year. He's not going to sign a long-term contract there. So if you're willing to take the risk and he bolts after one season, don't blame Rich Paul. He was out front and very public, and I think it scared a lot of teams off. I don't think teams like the New York Knicks had nearly the ammunition to present to David Griffin in order to get an Anthony Davis. So the grouping that was much to our chagrin early on basically was the best grouping that David Griffin and the Pelicans could get. And they are contingent upon and hoping upon these draft picks to help build their future in the fashion that maybe the Pelicans become the Boston Celtics of the past few years, where they're always in contention and they've got assets in which they can barter back and forth to try and even get better. So I think it was a win-win for everybody. I think with the landscape of the NBA, with what's happened at Golden State, with what's happening at Houston, I believe that the Los Angeles Lakers, and if healthy, and that's always a big if healthy, with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, are you kidding me? If that's not a legitimate contender for an NBA title, I don't know what is. I just don't. So I think it wins for them. I think it wins for the Pelicans as well. Now, I don't believe in my right mind that number four pick is going to be something that the Pelicans utilize on Thursday night. I just don't. I think David Griffin right here, right now, is trying to peddle that thing. I think he's trying to get a player that fits a need, and there's plenty of needs on this team. They need a big. They need a rim protector, right? They need that. They need shooters as well. So we'll see. We'll see. After Zion and Ja Morant and R.J. Barrett, after that, there's no such thing as a sure thing ever in these things. So we'll see what the hierarchy of the Pelicans does. But at least it gives you hope, right? It gives you hope. And I saw this feature. My boy Danny Broussard was in it, catching crawfish in the Atchafalaya, dealing with the Marty Party. And so shout out to my boy Danny Broussard. You get to watch a lot of things on your phone when you're sitting in a hospital. I can tell you that much. A lot of things. And I've learned a lot of things from it. So anyway, we will have much more on this. Ali Cassell, of the managing editor of At the Bird Rights, which is really good. They're really good at covering the NBA and the Pelicans. They are very good, and Ali's one of the best there is. He will be joining us shortly, and we'll break it all down. We'll go top to bottom. What I think is a win-win scenario. In hour number two, Billy Embody will join us of Go247 Sports. The LSU Tigers and Orgeron gets another commitment. Defensive lineman Patrick Jenkins out of John Arad High School in New Orleans. You can see, Cameron Jackson's already there. They're after Jacoby Guillory. They're after Jacqueline Roy. They're after Jalen Lee. He's trying to get those big guys up front, because you got to get them in order to beat the guys up there in Tuscaloosa. And Guillory just coming off an official visit in Alabama. He's scheduled to make his official visit to LSU this weekend, and then he's going to probably make his college choice this summer. So that's good. It's a busy weekend, at least four official visits on campus this weekend. Ed O's going to have his 7-on-7 team and lineman camp this Saturday, and then he closes out camps this summer Thursday with the elite high school session. Then it's a dormant time in the recruiting world. Coaches get to go relax for a little bit, go on vacation, get a little rest, relaxation, and then get ready for fall camp. And busy times. And Ed O, right now, according to those in the know, for whatever that's worth, has LSU as the number three recruiting class in the country behind Clemson and Alabama. So they're up there with the elite, with more work to be done. Now, we'll just see if they can keep all these prospects that are from the left coast, from Maryland. I still always deliberate on that, but we shall see. So, good to be back. It really is. I appreciate the prayers, the thoughts, and that's wonderful. My daughter is doing as well as expected, but it's a long uphill road before she's back being that that basketball shooting 14-year-old star of ours that I love with all my heart. But she's going to try. So, with that in mind, we'll take our first break of the day. Ali Cassell at The Bird Writes will be joining us, and we'll break down this Anthony Davis to the Lakers. What do the Pelicans get in return, and how favor? I think it's a win-win for everybody. I do. Time will tell. We'll be back. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Welcome you back. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. As well aware, I've been gone a few days, but big storyline still across the globe is the trade that was consummated after about 139 days of speculation and smoke screens and contradictions and a whole slew full of predictions. The most decorated and the greatest player in New Orleans Pelicans basketball history is gone. Ali Cassell, editor-in-chief of At The Bird Writes, is here to kind of go through the progression from the trade to where are we heading to now with the NBA draft coming up on Thursday. Ali, thanks for the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jordy. I am so glad that they were able to pull off this trade so that we didn't have it hanging over the draft and then beyond.
A lot of people will say, okay, why all of a sudden was what the Lakers offering now more palatable than what they were offering earlier on at the trade deadline? And to that you say what?
I say very simply, look at all that draft pick compensation coming back to the Pelicans. Previously, before the deadline, as far as we know, it was just simply going to involve two future first-round picks. Likely one of them being this year, which at the time, if you remember, they were nowhere near in sight of landing a number four pick. In fact,
right. The
Lakers had dreams of making the playoffs. And think about this. If they had added Anthony Davis at that time, I think almost assuredly they would have made the playoffs. So that 2019 first-round pick from the Lakers, it wouldn't have been worth much. You know, that's not what the Pelicans are looking for in rebuilding their team. So it definitely played out just from that aspect alone. But honestly, you've got to look deeper. And the way the Pelicans structured this deal, they're basically betting on that LeBron James isn't going to be around playing this type of basketball to the age of 40. And so that's a smart gamble. We know Anthony Davis needs help. He needs a good supporting cast to be able to bring a winner. And if we've noticed in the last 6 years, L.A. hasn't had a lot of success in bringing those primetime free agents. It's not as easy as everybody thinks it is, despite all the rumors you hear about them chasing this name and that name and so on, but it never pans out. So it's a lot easier said than done. And then when you factor in, the Lakers are now going to be without all those draft pick compensation, all those future picks, to where the Pelicans can pick and choose, grab a few here and there. They're not going to be able to keep their team at a high level if they don't make those signings and get lucky in free agency. So it's a really a good bet for the long term, and that the Pelicans would be able to use this as a funnel bringing in good, cheap talent. And this is regardless of whether they're a good team, because they're not going to have to rely on their picks as much because they'll have the Lakers pick. So I think it's a great deal, Jordy, simply because as far as what we've learned through the rumors, David Griffin didn't even have another offer that was comparable. Boston wasn't throwing in their top assets together in one deal. They were just basically offering just one of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum with that Memphis pick. And, you know, you probably heard the rest. Denver Nuggets didn't want to give up Jamal Murray and so on. So grabbing the Lakers deal, which was by far and away the best, plus it seems like he was able to squeeze out more than he should have because Rob Pelinka was betting against himself. It's such a win-win for the Pels.
Ali Cassell at the Bird Rights, kind enough to join us. Some people will say, well, what happened to Kyle Kuzma? And I guess you can't get everything. You'd rather have more of the draft pick side of things than getting a player of Kuzma's stature.
I'm not excited about Kuzma, and I don't think the Pelicans were as a player. But as a draft asset, he's wonderful. Reason being is he's under a cost-controlled contract for the next 2 years. He's getting paid roughly around $2 million for the following season and the year after. So that is why the Lakers really want to keep him, because if you're bringing a lot of max type of guys, you're going to need some really cheap contracts. And, of course, you know, you got to keep a little bit of the young core. But for the Pelicans, I think they viewed him more as an asset than a player, because he had his shortcomings, Jordy. For him to hold up an Anthony Davis deal is ridiculous. I mean, the guy shoots worse from three-point range than Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram.
That's pretty bad when you think about it. Ali, let me ask you, get a prediction from you, because I have an opinion on this, and I want yours. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and I think the steal of the pick of the group is Josh Hart. I really like his game. But do you see all three of those players in a Pelicans uniform next year, or do you think old Griff is out there to wheel and deal?
If I had to put money on it, I would say he'll keep all three.
Okay.
We know that Lonzo Ball is highly valued by this organization, especially Alvin. And we know that around Drew, and especially now Zion coming in, you need that point guard. You need somebody that can lead an Alvin Gentry offense, because that's what makes it hum, is a great facilitator. And the fact that Lonzo is even a good defender, I think we're going to see something better than what Rondo provided. You know, where Rondo was just really a good passer at that stage in his game. Ball's going to be able to bring more. He's going to be a lot more fiery. The big thing with him is going to be getting past those injuries, I think, even more so in his lack of shooting. I think his shooting is going to bounce back enough, Jordy. I think he suffered from a lot of confidence issues last year. It's not surprising. The Lakers imploded. I mean, Kuzma shot 30% from three. Lonzo, 41% from the free throw line. I mean, these kids were thrown through the bus. And Magic was even publicly, you know, whatever. We don't need to bring that up again. But they went through the ringer last year. So I expect them to bounce back. And as far as Ingram, you know, Griffin has been high on him in the past, and it's hard not to be, right? He's got the length of about 7'3", right, to where he can reach out. So he can guard 1 through 4. I mean, Griffin claims that he can guard a point guard because he's quick enough and smart enough. He just hasn't put it together enough yet. He's also 21, right? We got to remember, Ball and Ingram, they're younger than a lot of these draft prospects coming out this Thursday. So it's still smart to bet on these guys. I mean, former number two picks, you don't give up on this quickly. Some just take longer to develop, and I think there's enough there. And I think Griffin believes that. And so he's probably willing to gamble that. And, you know, Jordy, here's one good example of why I think this. The Pelicans are being very active in trying to move that number four pick. I don't think they want to bring in any more picks to, you know, young players to develop. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
I agree. Ali Cassell of At the Bird Rights, kind enough to join us. Anthony Davis no longer with the Pelicans, he's with the Lakers. Does that make the Lakers right now, considering what's going on at Golden State with all the injuries? I mean, do they become a contender with those two if LeBron comes back to form and stays healthy and AD stays healthy? That's a pretty good tandem for the short term.
I do, Jordy, because last year I remember a game where they played before all the crap. It's just a ceiling fan that they played the Golden State Warriors, and they blew them out. And that's when LeBron had, you know, Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee. He didn't have any of those top-notch guys around. And that's why I think they didn't even have Ingram or Ball, at least one of those two. And so they were decent a lot of times early in the year. So now you give LeBron Anthony Davis, a legit superstar, I think that's all he'll need. He is just that good of a playmaker, being able to carry so much of a load on his shoulders. If he gets anybody to help him in all the other areas, I mean, and with what you just mentioned, the Warriors are not going to be that elite team. The West is going to be wide open. I think it's hard not to pick against them, because then you got to figure out, they're strong enough, their pool of gravity and around the league is strong enough to where they're going to get Rondo to resign there, so they'll have their point guard, and they'll grab a couple of shooters, and they're set.
I'm with you. Ali Cassell at the Bird Rights. That would just make Pelican fans so thrilled, wouldn't it? Davis leaves, wins a title. But we have to see the forest through the trees, right? We have to see the forest through the trees. This is not going to be – this isn't an NBA franchise, the Pelicans. In my humble estimation, that's going to be a contender right away. It's going to take some time and some shrewd moves and to let these players develop to get to the point where, hey, maybe we become the Boston Celtics down the road where they're sustained success for 5-6 years in a row.
That's what we've all dreamed of here. You know, I started covering basketball the first year that the New Orleans franchise moved over from Charlotte. And I know, Jordan, I used to watch you, the old CFC broadcast, so it's quite fun. Yeah. But we have always wanted a plan here. All the fans I've ever talked to of a long-term vision, and I honestly can never recall one, you know. They've always mishandled their youth or not even given a chance, as Del Dempster, by trading away a lot of those future assets. So it's great to hear that David Griffin is probably taking the same kind of view. I hear him always using the words of sustaining, of having something like a vision, right? And he just used all these words to describe it. So I think that they're giving it about a three-year plan. I really, truly do. I think that's when you can start to expect maybe Zion to grow enough and be enough. Because remember, for as great as he's going to be, look how long it took, you know, LeBron, Michael Jordan, Giannis this past season before they finally got their teams falling into playoffs. It usually takes about 5 years. So it's smart to have that long-term plan. You can't rush these things. So I think that's another reason why we're going to see the way they build. Like I said, I'm not expecting them to trade this number four pick for some all-star. You know, we heard those rumors about Griffin wanting an all-star. I think he wants to build a young, solid team with youthful, potential all-stars, not somebody that's, like, say, 30 years old.
Right. I'm with you. All right. There's so much more to talk about this with you. If you don't mind, can we take a quick timeout? We'll come right back and we'll continue the conversation. Ali Cassell at the Bird writes as the Pelicans shaping their future with moves, with hopefully some good draft picks and some smart decisions. Where do we go from here? We know who the coach is going to be for a while. We just don't know who all the players are going to be. We'll continue the conversation with Ali Cassell after this here on the Jordy Helfberg Show. We welcome you back. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show presented by DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. For all your travel needs, make it your go-to stop. DC's Little Capital X on Ali Cassell at the Bird writes, kind enough to spend some time with us because, after all, it is the biggest story out there. The NBA draft is coming up on Thursday. The Pelicans have the first pick with... the luck of the bouncing ball, and because of the trade with Anthony Davis, they have the fourth pick in the draft. Who knows? Are they going to make a draft pick there? Are they going to shop that pick? In your perfect world, Ali, what do you do? Knowing the stature of this draft, knowing what's already in place, what do you do with that fourth pick?
I definitely don't think you use it. If you truly believe in Lonzo Ball is going to be the future cornerstone at point guard, you look at what's available at the number four pick, and three of the four names I keep reading are guards, usually lead guards. You got Culver, Kobe White, and Darius Garland. So you have no need for these guys. It's like I said, Ball's it, and Drew Holiday's committed to you for, you know, seeing how this plays out. So you don't want to waste that pick, essentially. Keep this guy buried somewhere down and causing commotion or having just few issues that you have with a young, super highly regarded prospect sitting more on the bench than playing on the court. So that's why I think that they have to move the pick. I think that's why we're hearing all these reports. And I think that Griff would like to grab that young star. I want to make a differentiation. I keep hearing people talking about all these young stars and maybe even trying to win now. I'm not talking about him chasing a Blake Griffin, maybe even a Bradley Beal. You look at what those guys have already done, the contracts they command, I don't think that would be in Griffin's best interest. Instead, you want to find a guy maybe on a rookie deal, like a Tatum. Maybe you can grab somebody that's about to start their second deal, like a Miles Turner, somebody that you think would fit perfectly next to Zion. Because I think that's going to be the toughest, is finding the perfect fitting pieces. As, of course, they're in demand, right? You want to shooting big that can also protect the paint, defend the rim. That's what Miles Turner is. I think that would be outstanding for Zion. You get a big who can shoot. That's why we also love Lauri Markkanen out of Chicago. Boy, if he could be had, I think he would be a sensational fit. So I think that's what we're looking for. If you can't make a deal involving the number 4 pick or something like that, then you obviously need to trade back. You do what Atlanta did with the Dallas Mavericks last year when Mark Cuban had to get Luka Doncic. You squeeze out 2 future first-round picks for 1. So I think worst-case scenario, we'll see something like that possibly happen.
Around Zion, look, this team, there's a lot of holes left, and that's why I'm saying it's going to take a while. You've got to get the right pieces in there. What's more necessary to make him have a smoother transition, a great shooter or a great big?
That's a good question. I think you have to go with a shooter because right now I don't see one with the roster presently constructed. Not somebody you feel comfortable starting, right? I mean, we lived through the Etwan Moore years of starting. And even he knew he was out of place, out of position, being the starting 3 in this league. So when you look at Lonzo, Drew, Brandon Ingram, Zion, I mean, where's that money ball 3 coming from that's going to pull all that gravity? Defenses are going to collapse all over him every time and open it up for Zion. So, yeah, I don't see it. That's why, you know, we're searching high and low for somebody possibly at the number 5. But if there is somebody, and if this is really a concern, I think, for David Griffin, you have to think maybe Brandon Ingram's name would be dangled out there. He's under, you know, one more year on his rookie deal, and then he's going to be looking at a potential big pay coming up this coming summer. So the Pelicans, they want to pay somebody like that with his injury concerns, with somebody who's only proven to be a volume scorer. So out of all the positions, do you think Ingram's might be the least secure? I mean, unless, of course, Drew Holiday wants that, but from everything we've heard, we can't count on that yet. Because he committed to this team. And that was surprising, Jordy. He committed to the Pelicans before they even signed Griffin and all this avalanche into all this lovely, beautiful thing that the Pelicans now have. So, yeah, the 3 ball. I think that's where the modern NBA is. You watch it as much as I do. So that's where it's at. Yeah. If you don't have the shooting, teams can just pack the paint on you.
So you dangle Ingram and the number 4 overall pick, and I keep hearing the name and I keep hearing the team. Is there any chance of a Bradley Beal?
I think there is. I had heard some rumors that Washington may want to undergo a full rebuild. You know, they've got John Wall sitting on those books, and he's going to be useless for this whole year, too. So why not bottom out, maximize some draft assets, and get a youth of a talent next summer? And so you trade away Bradley Beal, who's a great player. He can be a face of a franchise for, you know, a team that's kind of just trying to make the playoffs. So he's a very good, highly guarded player. But I'm just a little worried about his price, you know. Does he fit this timeline? I know he's 25, but he's commanding already now, was it $25, $26, $27 million a year? And then in two years, when his contract is up, you re-sign him. Is he, because then he's going to be right there in Drew Holiday's boat. Zion it suddenly grew with these 2 players who are more win now. Does that stunt his development? These are all the questions that I think Griffin's going to be considering. So I have hesitancy with Beal. And this is one more thing, Jordy. I know that he's a great shooter, and that's what the Pelicans need. But look, if you're committing the ball, you're committing the Holiday, who's going to be stuck full-time guarding opposing small forwards in this league? You depending on Drew Holiday do that? I mean, is that a good way to keep him around, who's volunteered to be the face, who has done so much previously, and now you're going to throw his body against, you know, the Kawhi Leonards and whoever else plays small forward? No, I don't think that's truly the best fit. I think Griffin wants to maximize every spot, every position, with everything. So that means we're not going to trade for somebody that's going to present a weakness. Take away from their best. Drew Holiday is at his best as a 2. So is Bradley Beal. So I see a conflict of interest there.
Right. Okay. Look, I will be sold on the prowess of David Griffin if he can convince somebody to take Solomon Hill off of our hands. If he does that, he's a 5-star to me.
I think Solomon Hill's going to be used as ballast in any kind of trade that they can do for a young star who's already on his second contract. I'm not too worried about his money sitting on a bookstore. Simply being the Pelicans aren't going anywhere next year. Do we really care that Solo is going to eat up $12 million? Maybe you can flip him at, you know, some team that's really trying to cut costs at the deadline to get a future asset. I think that might be a best-case scenario if he's not used in a big-time trade. So I'm not worried about Solo. I mean, we're close to the end here.
Gee whiz. Ali Cassell at the Bird writes, kind enough to join us. No surprise that Julius Randle declined his player option and is becoming a free agent. He's going to get paid by somebody, and I don't think the Pelicans were willing to be one of those teams to do so.
It wouldn't be smart, Jordy. I love what he did for the franchise. The coaches loved his work ethic, coming through and playing hard 100% every game, despite of all the disruptions that they had because of the Anthony Davis scenario, all the injuries, right. A ruined season. Julie thought he was coming to a winning season, right? A playoff contender after what he witnessed last year. So it's got to be really disheartening for a player who just left the Lakers in a lot of losing. But Julius is probably going to command, I think, about $20 million a year. I've heard New York Knicks are interested, Phoenix Suns, possibly the Mavericks. And look, somebody out there is going to pay him. There's a lot of money to be spent. A lot of teams have that cap space. And for the Falcons, it doesn't make sense because Julius's best position is going to be the one Zion's going to be playing, a point forward at the four. So it doesn't make much sense.
No surprise, though, that, again, the Pelicans picked up the option on Alvin Gentry's contract for the 2020-2021 season. I mean, that's just good business.
It absolutely is. Who had to endure, just look at from this perspective alone, who had to deal with all the questions from the media once the Anthony Davis trade request became public? It was Alvin every time out. And he didn't get full support from the front office. He wasn't even able to answer a lot of questions at times. He's saying, well, I'll pass along the message. And this and that. You don't put a coach in that position. We all felt sorry for him. You know, that became the predominant feeling. We stopped trying to ask him too many of these hard questions because it wasn't fair. He didn't have those answers. But aside from that, he's a highly regarded coach. We've seen when he gets the players in his system what they can do. As we saw in that playoff run, I don't think anybody expected the Falcons to even sniff the playoffs when DeMarcus Cousins went down. But look what that coaching staff did. They pushed all the right buttons, and they turned this into an almost a little mini juggernaut. They had 2 10-game winning streaks, tore apart the Trailblazers, you know. So it was a really kind of it was a shining moment, obviously, for Gentry, but it also showed what he can do. But like I said, I think Griffin, we can trust that he knows what Alvin wants. They work together. Griffin has a complete understanding on how to build teams. So I think he's going to do Gentry right, and if he does, and I think that we'll see Alvin once again. We'll see the maximum abilities of what he can do as a coach if he gets his fit of players underneath him.
And with Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Zion, he likes that up and down, fast game. I don't know if you can get any faster than that with those players.
Oh, boy, it's going to be a blur. It's going to be like watching a fast tennis match, right? Two power hitters hitting the ball back and forth across that net.
Ali Cassell at the Bird writes. So in a nutshell, you like the deal. I think the Lakers like the deal too.
I think
in the grand scheme of things, I think it was kind of a win-win for everybody because I don't believe there were many other players around simply for the fact, and you got to give Rich Paul a lot of credit. He came out there and did for his client what he should do. He let everybody know, Boston, we ain't going to sign long-term with you. And so they went back and all these. So it kind of, I mean, Anthony Davis's camp did their job. Griff got the best he could, I think, for what was out there. And now we just, look, Lakers got a proven commodity. The Pelicans, we're not so sure yet, but there's hope. Is that fair in assessment?
Absolutely. The way I look at this deal is that the Lakers absolutely had to land Anthony Davis. They couldn't again whip on him. They have no good, solid plan B behind them. I mean, they were not guaranteed even bringing in Jimmy Butler or Kemba Walker, one of those second-tier type of stars. So it was AD or nothing for that beaten-up regime of Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka, who were left obviously staying at the altar by Magic Johnson. You know, I just can't even imagine had they not been able to trade for Anthony Davis, what they would probably be going through during this free agency, what LeBron would probably be thinking about the rest of his contract in Los Angeles, because there were rumors he was going to give it another year, and if they would go through another year like they just previously did, he was going to ask out. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. The best player, one of the best players ever to play the game, wanting to leave the Lakers. So, yeah, it would not have been a good look. They had to land AD. So that in itself is obviously a win for L.A., but I still view this deal overall as a heist for the Pelicans because Pelinka was bidding against himself. You know, Griffin to walk away with all that draft compensation, plus being able to take a chance on three fine young players who should have productive careers, I mean, that's a windfall to me. So essentially every team wins, Jordy, but look, Griffin really made out. He shouldn't have made out as well as he did, I feel.
We all talk about Ball. We all talk about Ingram. But as I said earlier, Josh Hart can play. And he can shoot from outside, 40% three-point shooter. He's got that pedigree, 6'5", won a national championship at Villanova. He's never going to be your superstar, but he's always going to be that steady guy that you can count on to come off the bench and to provide defense, scoring, and a high basketball IQ on the court. I think he's the steal of the deal.
He's wonderful. I think he's a legitimate six-man type of candidate because, as you mentioned, he can score. He's aggressive. His three ball took a little bit of a dip last year, but I think he's a much better shooter. Obviously, a lot of the Lakers were much better shooters than they showed last year. So expect a bounce back there. But his defense, I think that's what's surprising in this. I'm glad you mentioned that because according to ESPN's DRPM, if I remember reading it right, he was ranked third among all shooting guards in defensive their statistic, that advanced statistic, DRPM. Mm-hmm. So his defense isn't a joke. He can guard a couple positions, and that's perfect. That'll fit right alongside Drew Holiday, Lonzo Ball, backcourt. Yeah. So I love him as a player, and he knows his role. He's already taken to the city, right, changing immediately his Twitter
that's
page,
right.
Making on Instagram. We've even actually had contact with him, and he's already agreed to join us on the podcast, and so we love him. But there's no doubt about that.
Man, Ali Cassell doing the work for At The Bird Writes. Must read material, must listen to material if you're an NBA fan, of which, of course, everybody knows that I am. I just absolutely love it. I'm so intrigued by this draft. I'm sure Griff has got people coming in to him, maybe working them out the next couple of days.
Yeah, we've heard that that was one of the main reasons why they wanted to get this deal announced quickly before Father's Day, right, so they would have plenty of time. I know Romeo Langford was in last night. He's slated to go about, 10 to 16 in the upcoming draft. So they're looking at all sorts of players because we don't know where the Pelicans are going to end up ultimately.
Right.
Like I said, I don't think they're going to keep number four. They're likely maybe to drop down somewhere. So they do have to get a good look at a lot of these players. So I hear that they're doing just that.
I can't thank you enough for extended time, man. It's fun stuff, and I love talking with you about it. You do a tremendous, tremendous job. And look, it's all predicated upon Zion and how he comes in, and it's going to be exciting and fun. We got to come up with a nickname for we used to have the Crescent City connection with Chris Paul to Tyson Chandler. I got a funny feeling Lonzo to Zion is going to be even more meteoric. So we'll see what comes of that. But thank you for your time. I know you're a busy person, but we greatly appreciate your candor and your expertise. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jordy, so much. Anytime.
You got it, my buddy. That's Ali Cassell at The Bird Writes. It's a big week for the Pelicans, and it just keeps on keeping on. I don't think they keep the fourth pick either. It's just a question, do they get more draft picks, or do they get a serviceable, use-now type of a player for it? Time will tell. Don't try and call David Griffin right now. He's not returning phone calls unless you're an NBA general manager or an agent with some good deals on the table. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, Acadiana's number one sports station, and your source for LSU sports. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Really enjoyed spending some time with Ali Cassell of At The Bird Writes. It's a big, big week for the future of the New Orleans Pelicans franchise. A lot of balls out there. Where are they going to land? What is David Griffin and Trajan Langdon and Swin Cash? What are they going to do? How are they going to come up with things? It's fascinating, fascinating stuff. Good news for the Houston Astros. Second baseman Jose Altuve could be activated as soon as tomorrow, Wednesday, as he makes his return from a strained left hamstring that's kept him out for more than a month. That's a month. Manager A.J. Hinch said that today. He told MLB Network Radio that Altuve will join the team in Cincinnati ahead of the series finale against the Reds. He hasn't played since May 10th because of the hamstring injury. He's played five games at AAA Round Rock in a rehab assignment. So that's always good news. Also, an update on outfielder George Springer, who's been on the injured list since May 25th with a left hamstring strain. Hinch said Springer will run the bases in Cincinnati on Tuesday before they look to send him on a rehab assignment later this week with the hopes of his return coming next week. So slowly but surely, the Astros are getting back to full strength, and that's a good thing. Reliever Colin McHugh has been out since May 14th with an elbow injury. Had a rehab appearance Monday. He's set for another one later this week. Getting better and better, getting closer and closer. And then, I mean, right, look out. Because even without all of those players, the Astros, pretty darn good, wouldn't you say? I mean, they're still playing really, really good baseball when you consider everything. They're 48 up, 25 down. They've won six of their last 10. They're really good at home, 27-11. They have an 8.5 game lead over the Rangers, 11 over the A's, 12 over the Angels, and 18.5 over the Mariners. So even without their full lineup, and that's a sign of a championship team, man, because, look, your players go down, but you have enough quality depth to make things happen. Look, the Yankees are leading the East with 44 wins. They're a game and a half over the Rays. Twins are playing really good baseball, consistent, 47-24 with a 10-game lead over the Indians. And yet the Astros, with all the injuries to key players, still have more wins in the American League than any other team. So it just goes to show you, you can be smart and get some things done. A good week as the Reds will be hosting the Astros up in Cincy. Always a fun thing. But the Astros really playing well, and it bodes well for the fall. Back to the NBA, the Knicks have already rejected the Hawks' offer for the number 3 pick in the draft. Al Horford says, "I'm tired. I don't want to." This is what's so funny about the NBA. I'm not going to sign that extension with you. I'm not. I'm going to become a free agent. He's going to decline to exercise his $30.1 million option for the 2019-20 season. And it's going to become an unrestricted free agent. You got to be kidding. Is somebody really going to pay Horford more than $30.1 million? 33 years old, averaged 13.6 points and 6.7 rebounds for the Celtics? I mean, seriously, is somebody going to pay him that much? I just can't imagine who's advising him and why. It makes no sense to me. He's a good player, but $30.1 million? No, 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 no. Oh, just in case you weren't sold on the Zion factor, Caesars Sportsbook has posted Zion as the significant favorite to win the Rookie of the Year award. Get ready, Pelicans. It's coming. It's coming. Guess what else is coming? Hour number two. Hot topics. Billy Embiid with the latest recruiting news for LSU. Plus, Alex Myers recaps the U.S. Open. It's all coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
In Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Shorty Hultberg.
Happy Tuesday afternoon, this June 18th, the year 2019. Hope you're having a fabulous day. Thanks so much for making us a part of it. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. I'm your host, Jordy Hultberg here, Studio 1A. Anthony Davis traded. Pelicans pick up some Lakers. They pick up some draft picks. And now we're anxiously awaiting to see what David Griffin does next. As the NBA draft is this Thursday night, the Pelicans have the number one pick. Welcome to the Crescent City, Zion. And the number four pick, which I don't think they're going to use. I think somebody else is going to want that, and I think David Griffin's going to be wheeling and dealing along those lines. LSU football picks up its 18th commitment for the class of 2020. Yesterday, in-state defensive lineman Patrick Jenkins of John Arad High School gave his verbal pledge. I always like to see, well, who else has offered the kid? Well, he had offers from Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, TCU, and Miami, to name a few. That tells me it's okay. With this pledge, LSU's class remains ranked number three in the nation overall, behind number one Clemson and number two Alabama. Coming up in this hour of the program, we'll get the very latest in recruiting from Billy Embody of Go247 Sports, and we'll recap the U.S. Open from Pebble Beach. Alex Myers, our golf analyst from Golf Digest, will join us. We'll have a little history lesson. Oh, this was a good one. 15 years ago today on the Oak Show, it was a good one. That's a hint. And then we'll close up with some birthday wishes as well. So it's all coming your way. But as we do each and every day at this time of the day, we welcome aboard my main man, CD, as we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Hit the button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Hot Topic time. We welcome in Clint Domain. Good afternoon, my friend. Good to be back with you.
It is great to have the dynamic duo back together again, Jordy. And yesterday, you're talking about on this day in sports history. I know you get to that at the end of the show, but yesterday, a very significant sports event, and probably, I'd say, cultural event, period, Jordy, happened on
what
this
happened?
Day yesterday, Jordy. The O.J. chase in the white Bronco, and it got me thinking,
oh my gosh,
where were you when all that went down?
I was at a party. I was in the kitchen, and I was looking at this on a little small kitchen TV, just mesmerized. And could you imagine if Twitter had evolved when that took place?
Especially now that OJ has Twitter.
Yeah. Jeez. What's going on with, I mean, what is the world coming to? And I've got some scores to settle. Oh my goodness. That's just scary. I'm sorry.
It's amazing, Jordy, just to see what's going on inside the mind of OJ on a 24/7 basis. A few days before the anniversary, and him just like, and the added fact that him asking about fantasy football advice earlier today was,
oh my God,
the best. He's like, Pat Mahomes, my number one pick. And I'll just say, Jordy, read the replies and get some popcorn ready. It is amazing to see the people just having fun with it.
OJ, back in the mainstream. Amazing. Amazing. What else we got, big guy?
Jordy, we got a lot to get to, obviously, over the weekend. We had, I think, really, it's just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Obviously, Anthony Davis trade. One thing everybody's not necessarily talking about is Julius Randle declining his player option. Feels as expected. Yeah. And he brought up Al Horford to end our number one. I want to kind of pair it off that as well. When you just look at Al Horford, you're talking about the money that he could want. He thinks he could want
$30 million.
But Jordy, you got to think about it. From his perspective, you don't have a Klay Thompson or a Kevin Durant that are going to be commanding the top dollar. And I think that's the same thing that a guy like Julius Randle, coming off of a career year, they're going to be trying to get that top dollar, because I think you don't have the two big dogs being the first chips to fall. You can really start controlling the free agency market if you're a Julius Randle or an Al Horford.
Well, Randle saw that, you know, Zion Williamson plays the same position, so he had to move on and go somewhere, and somebody's going to pay him the money. Al Horford, 33 years old, more than 30. I'm shocked. I'm stunned that he got that much money in the first place.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that he thinks somebody else is going to pay him that amount and get a long-term deal out of it. That's just mind-boggling to me. But somebody will do something out of desperation. It always seems to happen in the NBA, but not me. Not David Griffin.
Exactly.
I can promise you that.
David Griffin's already got Zion Williamson pretty much in the bag, and you brought the number four pick, Jordy, and you said they're probably not going to wind up using it. I'm going to be tentative on that, Jordy, because it's all about what happens with the New York Knicks, because I feel like they're a team that's definitely doesn't know what they want to do, and apparently reports are coming out. They're going to be working out Darius Garland, who is definitely somebody they're in serious consideration for taking the number three pick. So, Jordy, you can about imagine, we talk about how the Pelicans, they love the Kentucky Wildcats. Well, they sure be loving some Blue Devils, potentially Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett. Would you love that kind of combination?
Oh, my. And Frank Jackson and Jahlil Okafor and and Trajan Landing. And, oh, my God.
So many Blue Devils.
So many. Look, Zion needs shooters. I believe R.J. Barrett will be one of those guys that's a better NBA player than he was in college with the open court and all that. So, yeah, I mean, let's see. Let's see what happens. You know, Memphis is out trying to trade their point guard so they can get Ja Morant.
Yep.
And then we'll see what the Knicks do. You're right. A lot will be predicated upon that unless David Griffin has a deal in hand beforehand. We shall see.
I think there's going to be just something happening within the next, 24 hours or so to be, of course, a lot of rumors are as well about the Atlanta Hawks potentially giving them the 8 and 9 pick, which would be absolutely huge because you can about imagine you add a lot of depth with those picks. These guys aren't going to be day one starters. They're going to be more so a depth thing because you got some really solid players in that starting five, at least from what I can tell.
I just don't know if Griff wants to have that many young players on the team at this point in time. I'll have to wait and see.
Yeah,
it just depends on what kind of direction he wants to go. That's an awful lot of rookies taking up a lot of space, but it doesn't take up a lot of money. But does it fill the void and the need that you have to give to field a competitive team? So we'll see.
Yeah, Jordy.
Glad he's making those decisions and not me.
Yo, same here, Jordy. Same here. And, man, he definitely want to doing that big trade. But, of course, I think the biggest thing of them all that everybody's talking about is everybody's favorite, not TV dad, making the waves once again, LaVar Ball, making the headlines. And he's kind of doubling back on what he wanted to say back around the All-Star break about how Lonzo ain't never going to New Orleans. Apparently now he's saying reverse psychology here, Jordy. He wanted Lonzo on the Pels.
Exactly what I wanted to do. Best teams he going to play on is New Orleans. Great. With him at the one, Aaron at the two, Ingram at the three, Zion at the four,
Ingram
and
with the
Julius at the five. You get my boy to running teams like that, we're going to run loose.
Can somebody tell him it's Drew Holiday, not Aaron Holiday?
It's Drew Holiday, and ain't going to be no post player. Julius, that ain't going to happen either. Just go away, LaVar. Just go away.
So it's safe to say Jordy Holtberg will not have LaVar Ball on the program.
No, I was asked. I'm not even going to give him the benefit. I'm not even going to do anything with that dude. I could care less. I don't want him. Even if he begged me, no thank you. Not happening.
All right, Jordy, we're gonna have a little fun here because some news came out in a report from the Tennessee and Adam Sparks with kind of the headline. The Vandy Whistler at the College World Series was threatened with ejection for his whistling and also bothering fans in person watching on TV. Yet the officials threatened him three times with ejection. My goodness, Jordy, this is just getting ridiculous. The Vandy Whistler getting even more headlines.
Once again, that's the whole problem. It's like streakers. They get the headlines. It's like this Whistler gets the headlines. So he just needs to go away. And you know what? Vanderbilt needs to tell him, you're aggravating too many people. Go away. And all they have to do is not put him on television.
Yeah.
And, then he'll go away. They'll make him go away. It's ridiculous, the Whistler.
It is next. It's insane, Jordy. It's insane.
Get a life. Yeah. Really?
We got one more question here, Jordan. We got one more for you. Moving over to the NFL, and we talked about it last week. Michael Thomas very well could be the next one to get an extension. Apparently, right after Mickey Loomis announced extension conversations between the Saints and Thomas had occurred, it's gaining a lot of steam, and apparently the Saints are more than comfortable making him the top wide receiver or the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL right now. And that's impressive. But also, you got Julio Jones potentially going to be signing soon. Who gets it done first, Jordy? Julio or Thomas?
Thomas. Saints are smart. Falcons are dumb. Thomas gets the deal done, and everybody's happy. And we're out of time for Hot Topics.
$28.3 million, Jordy. That's how much Michael Thomas is getting paid a year.
Go get him. Michael, just go get all you want, baby. Get all you want. You're that good. Hot Topics brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, Cajun Chef. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a little small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Billy Embody joins us next to talk LSU recruiting here on the Jordy Helper Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, Acadiana's number one sports station.
Powered by Lafayette Roofing. Up next, the Angels, July 6th and 7th. Register in the clubhouse at 1037thegame.com for your chance to win 4 tickets to each game, an overnight stay in the A-Loft Houston downtown, parking, and a tour of Minute Maid Park. It's the next Astros weekend getaway of the season. Register in the clubhouse at 1037thegame.com for your chance to win. Powered by Lafayette Roofing and Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Liberty Mutual Insurance presents
and Doug.
Limu, there's a woman threatening to sign up for generic car insurance.
Grab your birdseed and let's go.
I'm going to sign these papers right here, right now.
Ma'am, drop the pen. Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance, so you only pay for what you need.
Thanks, Limu, Emu, and Doug.
Don't thank us. Thank Liberty Mutual, but also thank us.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Equal housing insurer. State laws apply.
Locally owned businesses build strong communities by sustaining vibrant town centers and contributing to local causes. Do your business with these certified South Louisiana businesses.
Nash's Restaurant invites you to get away, relax, and enjoy casual dining in an elegant atmosphere. With over 50 choices of exceptional Italian seafood and steak dishes, Nash's has something for everyone. Nash's Restaurant, one block off Highway 90 in Broussard.
Road Ridge Truck Stop Casino. We have the newest games around, hot seat drawings, and monthly specials like no one else. Located on the Brobridge Highway in the banks of the Vermilion River. Come on out today and try your luck at the Brobridge Truck Stop Casino.
Hi, I'm Cherie Gilbo with Gilbo's Pharmacy. One of the many services we provide Upper Lafayette is our multi-dose packaging. Meds are packaged with a date and time to take, and we'll call or text you when they're ready. It's that easy. Come see us at Gilbo's Pharmacy in downtown Carncrow.
Shop local. Shop certified South Louisiana.
Cajun Chef says try our pickled okra and spicy pickled green beans seasoned with our special Cajun flavor. It's excellent for party hors d'oeuvres and that special Bloody Mary. It's also a great addition to a salad bar. For you pepper lovers, Cajun Chef, boy, we've got the right kind of jalapeno peppers with just the right amount of spiciness, excellent for nachos, and a way to spruce up your pizza. Why not try jalapenos and beans, salads, gumbos, and other Cajun dishes? Why not try Cajun Chef? When you do, you'll agree, Cajun Chef is not only deliciously different, it's decidedly better. Cajun Chef.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back to the Jordy Helfer Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Brought to you by Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Watch all the ball games, the College World Series, the NBA Draft. Hooters has some good food as well. Hooters just makes you happy. Another commitment for the LSU class of 2020 yesterday. So with that in mind, let's kind of figure all this stuff out with my main man from Go247 Sports, Billy Embody, kind enough to join us. Billy, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Doing well, Jordy. How about you?
I am terrific. Thank you very much. All right, so this class keeps growing and growing. Their 18th commitment. Tell me about Patrick Jenkins, another defensive lineman. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, defensive tackle out of John Arid in the New Orleans area. Patrick Jenkins was somebody that really, really impressed at LSU offensive defensive line camp. And so Ed Ogeron went ahead and put an offer on the table for him earlier this month, and they put the full court press on him to get on board. And sure enough, he did. He's somebody that at 6'2", 280, 85 pounds, has picked up offers really in the last like couple months from Miami, Mississippi State, Tennessee. They were all there at his spring game, and I was actually watching as well, and they all offered right after that spring game. So it just kind of shows the trajectory that Jenkins has been on as a prospect as of late. So he picks up an LSU offer, and it didn't take long to really connect the dots with that one. And sure enough, LSU got him on board. He's somebody that could really play end in the 3-4 scheme, but if they play four man down, he'll end up, you know, inside a little bit as kind of a quick pass rusher, defensive tackle type guy. He plays with a really high motor. He's a really good kid. This is a really good pickup for LSU.
And it always helps when you get the kids from New Orleans. That's always been a focal point of LSU. And I guess it goes to show you, game tape is one thing, but that's why they run all these camps in the summertime, and they watch these kids up close and personal, and they go through the drills that they're going to coach the kids that they get when they come to LSU. And obviously they saw something that they liked, because maybe just ranked a 3-star, whatever it may be, but that doesn't matter. It's what you see up close and personal. And so the eyeball always tells the truth.
Yeah, and like I said, they really liked what they saw from him. He had a really good first step. He actually went up against some really good offensive line talent. Sometimes in these camps, it can be a mixed bag at times, but there were some pretty good offensive linemen that he was going up against and having success with going against as well. So he showed up and he showed out, and so he deserved the offer, and it's a nice commitment for LSU.
Billy Embody, Go247 Sports, kind enough to join us. It's another busy weekend with official visitors coming on campus, including – I think priority number one for LSU, and that's Jacobian Guillory, the big defensive tackle prospect who is coming off an official visit in Alabama. What have you heard about that visit, and how important is it that LSU gets him next?
Look, he's maintained that at this point it's an LSU-Alabama battle. I think most people that have followed this one from start to finish will tell you that LSU feels pretty good about where they stand. Alexandria is a LSU stronghold, and you know, Jacobian has really stuck to his timeline. He wanted to camp at all the schools that he was considering late, which really was Alabama and LSU, and he did that. Mm-hmm. And then he took official visits to Alabama, and he's going to take one to LSU. And then, from all we've heard, he's going to make a decision relatively quickly after this, and kind of shut things down for his senior year. So I think LSU has a right to be confident heading into the weekend, especially since, you know, at least from what he's told us, Alabama hasn't overtaken LSU. And so I think LSU can create a little bit more gap. And then, you know, if all goes right for Ed Ogeron and the Tigers, land one of the best players in the state of Louisiana.
Jacobian Guillory, you still got Jacqueline Roy out there. You still got Jalen Lee out there. Cameron Jackson, you can sense that Coach O, whose specialty is the defensive line, is really, really trying to gear up at that spot.
Yeah, this is a critical, critical class for LSU on the defensive line, especially you have guys like Davin Cotton who transferred away. You don't know what you have just yet in Nelson Jenkins, and you know, we haven't seen Neil Farrell and Justin Thomas kind of emerge like they've kind of been talked up, especially Neil Farrell. So they need to hit on this class in terms of difference makers. And you're seeing them, you know, really just go all out. I mean, Jaqueline Roy has been on LSU's campus 2, 3, 4 times a week, it seems like, this summer. And that's been a consistent thing. And Jalen Lee's been around a lot. Jacobian Guillory has been for camp and an official visit now. So they're doing a really good job. And, I mean, look, it's a make-or-break type defensive line class.
Here's Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. I mentioned it's a busy weekend. Apparently 4 official visitors will be on campus this weekend. We know that Guillory is one of them. Coach O is going to have his 7-on-7 team and lineman camps this Saturday. And then he closes things out next Thursday with the elite high school session. Tell me about the elite. I mean, how many invitees are there for something like that in your guesstimation?
Yeah, this is the one where they really push to get their commitments, their top targets. You know, they have, I think, for the defensive line camp earlier this summer, they pretty much had their all of their top defensive linemen, especially on camp campus for that. So I think you could see guys more come back to hang out. They could work out. Jacoby and Guillory actually can't work out since he's on his official visit. They're not allowed to evaluate him in a physical setting. But he'll be there hanging out for camp and all that. But this will be, you know, one of those weekends where a lot of guys will be in town. And it's a really, really strong camp traditionally. But you just never know who you could see, you know, show up. Right. I mean, it's really it could be the top guys in Louisiana. It could be elite national guys. I know Antoine Sampa, the number two inside linebacker in the country and an LSU commitment, are supposed to be on campus this weekend. So he might camp. He might hang out. But there's going to be plenty of talent on campus, that's for sure.
Billy, that running back from California, I think it's from California. Anyway, one of the top running backs in the country. He visited, and how did that go?
Yeah, Kendall Milton, the five-star running back who visited LSU and then visited Georgia and then is headed to Alabama this weekend. It went really well. I think LSU is kind of just right in there, battling. He's set to make a decision at the end of July. I think if you had to pick right now, I would say Georgia would probably have the edge. I just think the Bulldogs are in a really good spot there. But look, I mean, LSU's done a really nice job with him from the moment that Elias Ricks committed. He's been a top target and one that a lot of people, you know, pegged that LSU would be right in the mix for until the end. And we'll see kind of as the dust settles in July if they can get him on board. But right now I think they're trailing Georgia just by a smidge.
Billy, I'm about to go 247 Sports. I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little hoops. What's going on with Will Wade? Anything you're hearing along that front?
Well, I'll be honest. It's pretty quiet. And from our discussions with Will and Destin at the SEC spring meetings, his plan is to keep Marshall Graves on scholarship as of now. And so that leaves two scholarships open with, obviously, the addition late of Trendon Watford that they got, that took one. And so they have two open. All eyes are on if Infale Dante, the five-star center in 2020, will reclassify to 2019. And if he does, LSU is going to be right in there for the mix for him. They've already hosted him for a visit. That was back in the fall. And a lot of the schools that he's considering as far as reclassifying and going to have hosted him already. So this is something where, if the academic work lines up, and that would really take, I think, into July to figure out. If all that lines up, he could make the move. And LSU's rim protector, big man, I would say problem at this point, would be solved in a big way if they can get him. But that's really who LSU and a bunch of other schools are watching late in this process. And then from there, LSU wants to add a transfer or somebody that they could redshirt and sit out next season as that 13th-type scholarship. So we'll see kind of what Will Wade does there.
Maybe not the same flair that you had the year before with Naz Reid and Emmett Williams and Darius Days and that group, but still, with Watford and what you got in the early signing period, it's still another good class from Will Wade, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and when we talked to Will, and that was the first time where he got to really open up on, I think, some of the early signees, and especially after watching them through their high school and their junior college seasons. I mean, he called Charles Manning flat out the best junior college player in the country. Now, I think, you know, he admitted he's a little biased, but that's just the type of player he sees in Charles Manning, who's kind of like a Marlon Taylor light, I would say. He can probably shoot the three a little bit better, but he's bouncy, he's athletic, he can defend and do all those things. And then James Bishop is somebody that they view as like a four-year, 1,000-point, really, really, really good basketball player, you know, and somebody that'll really, really make an impact scoring the basketball for them as well. So those are kind of the two pickups they got at the guard position in the early signing period.
Well, I hope you had a great vacation. I'm glad you're back, and I thank you for your time. All the best to you and the family, and keep us up to date when things happen. We always appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jordy. I appreciate it. Glad to be back.
All right, buddy. You take care. Billy Embody, go 247 Sports. We will take a timeout. Yes, there is a U.S. Open champion, a new one, and we got to recap things with our buddy Alex Myers of Golf Digest. That story coming next here on the Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia Exit and Brobridge. Frankie's got everything you need for your travels, whether you're going 5, 50, or 500 miles. It doesn't matter. And for everyone in your travel party, from the youngest of the young to the oldest of the old, D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon has it all for you. Plus, that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Telling you, the cheeseburger can't be beat. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, my go-to stop. Make it yours as well. I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. We'll be right back.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Hi, welcome back. How about Gary Woodland? How cool was that as he sank the birdie putt on the 18th and final hole to extend his lead and to win his first major championship, this at Pebble Beach and the U.S. Open. Our good friend Alex Myers was there. He got to see it all, and he joins us now to share his thoughts and recapping it. Alex, it was quite the duel down the stretch with Brooks Koepka and Gary Woodland. Koepka made it earn it. Made him earn it, and Woodland certainly did. What your thoughts as you had a day to reflect now on the U.S. Open?
Yeah, I think you described it perfectly. I mean, Brooks Koepka came out of the shoot on Sunday red hot. Those four birdies in his first five holes, the only hole he didn't birdie, he made one of the greatest pars I've ever seen on the second hole. The media center was abuzz. People were going crazy. It just looked like a foregone conclusion. He was going to come back and win this thing, even though he started from four down. And then, you know, he kind of cooled off a little. And Gary Woodland just never blinked. I mean, he just played incredible golf, the best putting week of his life, for sure. Probably the best chipping week of his life, as we saw with him even chipping one off the green on 17, which was just an incredible shot that we'll remember. He just had so many times where he had a chance to falter, and he just never did. You know, he took the lead through 36, and everybody said, he's not going to get it done. Through 54, he's 0 for 7 with 54 leads. And not only does he close out his first time with a 54 lead, he does it in the major, and he does it with the best player in the world breathing down his neck. Just an incredible performance by Gary Woodland.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. I thought he won the tournament on the 14th hole. When he went for the green on the par five with a three wood about 260, 265, whatever it was away, that took a lot of you know whats to go do that.
Oh man, without a doubt, and you're right. I would say he won it on that shot, but also he still had to convert the birdie, and he actually didn't. He had a great little chip shot there, but he made the four footer for birdie. But you're right. Once that ball landed. And it looked like he was going to make a birdie. It was kind of like, wow, this guy isn't playing, you know, to protect the lead. He's playing aggressively. He's staying with his game plan. You know, he's not shying away from a big shot. I mean, he's using his strengths to his advantage. I mean, he's one of the longest hitters on tour. You know, a lot of guys compare him to Brooks Koepka, kind of a similar build. You know,
exactly.
Similar power. And, you know, that shot was incredible. That hole is the toughest par five you will ever see. From the tee, well, first of all, from the tee, you can barely see anything. Then even once you get out to where these guys hit their tee shots, you look up at that green and you say, there's no way anyone can reach this green. And certainly, you have to hit a perfect, even the biggest hitters have to hit a perfect drive just to even have a chance. And, you know, he did that. He went for the shot. He pulled it off. Just an amazing shot because, that hole is no pushover. Usually the par fives are where you go and make your score. That par five, you're happy with a five every day. And he went ahead and made that birdie and really kind of put it away.
I kind of loved it. And golly, you know, I'm a Koepka fan, obviously, but the fact that Woodland did that video that with Amy Bakkerstedt, the 20-year-old with Down syndrome during the Phoenix Open.
Sure.
I mean, how can you not pull for Gary after that, something like that?
You're right. I mean, what an amazing moment. I think that's the most watched PGA Tour video of all time. I mean, the thing just went viral. Of course, certainly the main reason why it went viral is because Amy made that par on one of the famous holes. Got still 16th hole, you know, the huge grandstands there. She hit it into the bunker. Gary offered to get the ball out of the bunker first. She said no. She hit a bunker shot to 10 feet. She made the putt for par. I mean, it was a legit par. And, of course, the crowd went wild. And, yeah, what a moment. Those two have stayed in touch. Really sweet moment, obviously, after his press conference when he FaceTimed her. And it was just really cool to see. And, of course, then today, on his part of his media tour, he reunites with her on the Today Show and brings the trophy and, you know, kind of gave her credit for motivating him. And it's amazing that all happened this year. It just it was a really special a moment to add to this tournament.
And he's in the record books, the 13 under 271, bested Tiger back in 2000 with his 12 under 272. I guess nobody cares because Tiger won by 15 shots that time. But
right. But
I don't think he'll take that $2.25 million, the richest payoff in golf, and be very, very content with it.
Oh, very content. And, you know, he knew that putt on the last hole was to break the record too. He thought it would be nice to get to 13 under. And yeah, I mean, certainly you can't really compare years. Obviously, when Tiger did it, he was the only person to even be under par. This year, there were two guys at double digits under par, which is remarkable at a U.S. Open. But you know, Brooks Koepka, he can't feel too bad. I mean, you get to 10 under at a Pebble Beach U.S. Open, you think you're going to win. And the only reason why I didn't was Gary Woodland had the week of his life. And not to say that it was a fluke by any means. Gary Woodland actually entered the week ranked 25th in the world. When Grant McDowell won in Pebble 2000, he was 37th in the world. So Gary Woodland, you know, is a good player. He's won three previous tournaments. He started now to pop up on major leaderboards in the past couple of years. You know, he was in the final. He was leading through 36 at the PGA last year, so this was certainly no fluke, and I think we'll definitely see him again. He's just got too much power not to. But, yeah, it's just incredible that how tough golf can be. You know, you got Brooks Koepka doing everything he can, but he's in a group ahead. It's not like he can put the pressure on face-to-face, and, again, he can only do so much. He got to 10 under. Gary just never relinquished the lead to him. It was pretty impressive.
Some of those tee shots started to go a little errantly on him. The thing that surprised me the most was Justin Rose. I mean, he just kind of fell out of the race. Three bogeys in a four-hole stretch on the back nine. I never expected that.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say it. I didn't expect that, but I don't know. I've seen Rose in these big final rounds. I know he won at Marion. You know, obviously his lone major in 2013. There really haven't been too many other times where he's been that close to the lead on the Sunday, and when he has, even at the Tour Championship last year, for instance, he kind of, you know, gave it away and almost gave away the FedEx Cup to Tiger Woods. He had such a bad day that last day at East Lake. So, you know, he's not the sturdy. It's funny because he looks so solid when you watch him play. But on Sunday, definitely, you know, he's had some struggles. And it was an interesting week, though. I do give him credit because he didn't have his strength usually is tee to green. And he was actually really off this week. He was not sharp, but his short game was fantastic. His putting was superb. That's what kept him in it. So if he can take anything positive from that, it's that, wow, I didn't even play my best tee to green, and I was hanging in there at a major championship. Yeah.
We'd be remiss if we didn't get the Tiger Woods update. What did you see? What happened to him?
Well, just kind of a crazy final day for Tiger because, you know, he four over through six holes where everybody's making birdies on those holes. And he looked like he just wanted to hop on his yacht or whatever was there and sail off into the sunset. And then, you know, he shoots six under on the last 12 holes. So I'd like, you know, I figured it was kind of a disappointing week for him, but at least, like at the Memorial, with his strong finish on the weekend, at least he can take something positive going forward. Now it's going to be interesting again. It looks like he's not going to play before the next major, the British Open, which will be the final major of the year. And obviously we saw him take all those weeks off from the Masters to the PGA, and we saw how much he struggled. So there'll be definitely some questions if he shows up at Royal Portrush, having not played since Sunday at Pebble. But he's still learning how to do that. He's still learning what works for his body. The scariest thing for me with him is just, he mentioned when the weather is that chilly, not that it was even that cold, but that cool, it's not good for his back and even his neck. We saw him wearing the KT tape. Right. He's forecasting ahead in Northern Ireland. It's probably not going to get that much warmer than it was at Pebble next month. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles those conditions up there.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. So that's just a beautiful course. Were the players pleased with how the course was set up? Was everything hunky-dory this time around for a U.S. Open?
It really was, and it was the best example you can show of that is that Phil Mickelson, after shooting himself out of the tournament on Saturday, including a triple bogey on the last hole, walked over to the flash area to give an interview and just gushed about the setup and the USGA and how they got it right this time, and it's the best he's ever seen. Meanwhile, less than 2 weeks ago, he was torching the USGA, saying they'd never gotten a setup right in 30 years that he's played. If it weren't for rain, they would have had all these other disasters. So the fact that he was, leading the charge this time in the praise shows you that the players were happy. That being said, I think some fans might not have been, including myself, that happy to see that many guys that deep under par. I mean, you'd like to see them struggle just a little more, I think. The USGA, I think, did a really nice job, and I think they thought the wind was going to play a bigger factor, and it just never really picked up. And so that, you can't really account for Mother Nature.
All right, so I'm going to go out there and put my $550 on the table and go play that son of a gun. Nah, that's not happening. Yeah, and Phil, if Phil had ever won a U.S. Open, I would have said, okay, that has some value, but it sounds like spilt milk to me. I'm sorry. It just does.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does a little. I mean, and certainly it's tough to make, say that that's an excuse for why he hasn't won. Obviously, he's shot himself in the foot enough times in final rounds. But yeah, you're right. It probably would be different if he had won a U.S. Open. He probably wouldn't be as critical. He also needs to be nice now, though, because he's getting up there, and he might need some special exemptions from the USGA at some point.
Yes.
So it might be time for him to change his tune and kind of butter them up.
Okay. Next up, Alex Myers, Golf Digest. We've got the Open. That's the next major. I guess that's somewhere in the middle stages of July. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep. And about 4 weeks from now,
gotcha.
Royal Portrush is going to be the host. It's the first time it's hosting since 1951, so a lot of guys won't really know much about it. Rory McIlroy, though, broke the course record there when he was 16, so he certainly knows about it. Amazingly enough, Brooks Koepka's caddy grew up playing there, Ricky Elliott, so he's going to have some nice inside info as well. No reason to think he shouldn't be the favorite, just based on his form, how he plays in the majors, and just a little bit of local knowledge that he'll have.
Alex, have you been nice to Golf Digest? Are you going to be able to take a trip to Ireland soon?
I don't know if it's going to happen. I think I played my cards with Pebble, and I don't think I'm going to get out there. But I've heard it's beautiful. I would like to get out there sometime.
Well, that's awesome. I know you're on a time constraint. I greatly appreciate it, as always, my friend. You take care, and we'll get together with you prior to the Open Championship in Northern Ireland. So thank you very much, my friend.
You got it, Jordy. Sounds good. Take care.
All right, take care. Alex Myers, the terrific writer for golf with Golf Digest. He is tremendous, tremendous. So, Gary Woodland, congratulations to him with the Open Championship, $2.25 million as he shoots a 13-under 271. 31 players finished under par at Marine Layer, according to the experts out there, blocking the sunshine. No significant win at Pebble all week. A lot of players under par. Some people have a problem with that. Some people don't. I just appreciate anybody that can shoot under par. That's all I'm saying. We'll be back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
Never
play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hi, welcome back. Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. College World Series as we speak. Louisville leads Auburn 4-1 in a weather delay. And coming up later tonight, it's an SEC matchup, Vanderbilt versus... The Vanderbilt-Mississippi State game has been pushed back to Wednesday. So weather causing a problem in Omaha. Florida State got beat by Michigan 2-0. So Michigan in the driver's seat. Florida State on the brink of elimination. So let me bring CD in here real quick. Any surprises to you in this College World Series?
I think it's the fact we wound up seeing Arkansas 0-2 barbecue. I think that's probably the biggest. I know it seems so generic, but that's definitely the biggest surprise of them all, Arkansas. And then the way they went out, because this was a team that heading into the tournament was one of the hardest hitting teams just up and down that lineup, and they just kind of, I guess they got gun shy a little bit there when you just look at the way they were. I mean, you got shut out in game one and a real good pitcher's duel against Florida State, and they couldn't really get a whole lot going in terms of momentum up against a pretty dang good Michigan team.
Speaking of momentum, I mean, the way Mississippi State came back and did what they did to win 5-4 the other day, I think it was just very impressive. And again, tomorrow you've got Vanderbilt and Mississippi State. I mean, that's – I think you're looking at a national champion out of one of those two. I really, really do. A lot of Louisville Cardinal fans may have a difference of opinion on that one, but I got a funny feeling – Vandy, Mississippi State, that's going to be I think the champion's going to come out of one of those two teams. They're both hot. They both got a lot of talent, and we'll see. But I think LSU fans go, Michigan, really? Michigan is playing the way they are? It just kind of puts a sour taste in LSU fans' mouth, plus the fact that Michigan beat Florida State the way they did. So it's just, it's baseball, right? You just never truly know the way it's going to go, but we shall see. Here's one for you, Clint, because I know you used to love the XFL, but apparently He Hate Me is missing. Police in South Carolina have put out a missing person advisory for former Philadelphia Eagle, Carolina Panther running back Rod Smart, perhaps best known for his He Hate Me jersey in the XFL. He was last seen Wednesday in Indian Land, South Carolina. So apparently got a lot of people worried about him. How much do you think a He Hate Me jersey would go for these days? That was kind of an icon. He was like the star of the XFL just because of that name.
Oh, I think that would wind up fetching a pretty penny there, Jordy. I think it definitely would. I'd probably say maybe a little bit more than maybe a signed Bobby Boucher jersey from Adam Sandler and our good buddy Michael Papajohn.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I've got one for you as we do our daily history lesson today. It was 15 years ago on this day, June 18th, that Average Joe's Gym overcame a four-man deficit to defeat the Globo Gym Purple Cobras in the American Dodgeball Association of America Tournament Championship game. Vince Vaughn and company got it done as Average Joe's beat Globo Gym 15 years ago today. I still watch that stupid movie. I still do. I don't know why, but I do. So on this day in sports history. All right, if the 18th of June is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day with cake and ice cream and blow out the candles and get a present or two. You share with the likes of 43-year-old Blake Shelton. And happy 77th birthday to Paul McCartney. How about that? Paul McCartney of the Beatles, 77 years old. I wonder what the Beatles would be like. There's a movie out now where nobody had heard of the Beatles songs, and some guy starts singing them, and he becomes this rock star. Anyway, I think the Beatles would still pass the test of time today. I truly do. All right. Again, great to be back with all of you. Thanks for all the prayers for our daughter. She is going to be fine. The back surgery was very successful. Shout out Dr. King and all of his staff at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. They were magnificent. But it's a 24-hour-a-day job to get her back up and going. So I can sleep in the next life. Because it ain't happening right here and right now. It's just not. We'd like to thank Ali Cassell for coming on. We talked a lot about the New Orleans Pelicans and Anthony Davis going to the Lakers and what David Griffin has gotten for the Pelicans. Thursday's going to be an interesting day, to say the least, with the NBA draft. We'll see if any deals are done prior to that. Because there's a lot of teams that I think would be interested in that fourth pick. And it just depends on what David Griffin gets offered to see what kind of deal can be done. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those Lakers and the number four pick gets dealt for a more established player. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Time will tell. Thanks to Billy Embody for the latest on LSU football recruiting and our good buddy Alex Myers of Golf Digest. Gary Woodland, the king of the golfing world, with his 13-under par win at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Tomorrow on the program, I have no idea. I have no idea. We'll see. We'll talk more about the NBA draft. We'll talk about some of the players that the Pelicans could be targeting at the fourth pick if they so desire to keep that pick. More on the College World Series, Mississippi State versus Vandy. That's a heck of a matchup. And anything else that comes down the pipeline, we'll be there. CD will be there. Thank you so much for all your help, my friend. Greatly appreciate that. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We only got one of these Tuesdays, so make it the best afternoon and evening you can. And come up back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.